This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Going to have Adam Burke, our managing editor, join the program here in a little bit, as well as our Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds. Talk about the Charles Schwab. Get some golf bets out there for you people before they start up that tournament tomorrow. But we love it. We need it. And again, you got to know what's going up and down in the stock market. Let's do our rousing edition of Stock Up and Stock Down.
Buy low, sell high, as long as you have a reason why. Whose reputation is soaring and who's on the verge of collapse? It's Stock Up, Stock Down.
Jensen, I've won the toss this week. I will elect to receive, and I'm going to go right with Mike Brown in New York City for the New York Knicks. Because I'll tell you this, he would have been the fall guy if things had gone bad. We've seen this happen with Mike Brown throughout his coaching career. And look, sometimes you get better at different stops. I think clearly right now, this was the right mix. And you can look at, you know, Tom Thibodeau, who was his predecessor there, and say, well, he got a lot out of this Knicks team. And then you bring in Mike Brown. People went, well, is that a lateral move? Is this really an upgrade at head coach? We can talk about Jalen Brunson and Cat and Mikal Bridges and all these different guys. He has a couple of those guys in Bridges and certainly Cat playing different roles. They are playing differently this year under Mike Brown. That's coaching. And we haven't seen that in other stops here in the NBA playoffs, where you've seen a team be elevated by the guy calling the shots and not the other way around. So I don't know if the Knicks are going to win their first title since 1973, but I do know this iteration of the Knicks with Mike Brown as the head coach is giving them the best chance to do so. So you got to give this man his flowers when he's earned them. And boy, has he earned them this year. When you can get a guy like Carl Anthony Towns to buy in to be a facilitator first and not a scorer first, when you can buy into Mikal Bridges for all those draft picks you gave up to go get him, everybody said he's a bust. You have him playing differently now, and you still have Jalen Brunson get the best out of him. That's coaching, people. So you got to give the flowers to a guy that's earned them, and that's why the stock is up for Coach Mike Brown.
Dave, we love fan bases. We love impromptu ideas and things that happen right before our eyes. Well, tarps off is one of the trends that has caught fire here. And for those that don't know, it started with Oklahoma State, I believe, at a college football game way back in October of 2025. A fan went shirtless in a quiet section of Boone Pickens Stadium, started twirling his shirt. Other fans joined in. It quickly caught on. Well, this year, May 15th at Busch Stadium, it was the Stephen F. Austin Club baseball team that was in town for a tournament that started the movement in right field. In the upper deck section, if you will, they removed their shirts, they waved them emphatically, and it helped the Cardinals to a dramatic 5-4 walk-off win in 11 innings. So much so that Ollie Marmol, manager of the Cardinals, noticed the quote-unquote shirtless bros in right field, publicly praising them after the game, bought out the section the next day for free tickets, and even invited the group into the clubhouse. It has caught fire. People of all ages, we welcome you into a fraternity unlike any other. Stock up on tarps off.
I would just say sunscreen. Let's be safe out there, people. It's going to get hot here in these summer months. My next stock up, it's going to be, how about Carolina sports in specifics? Now, again, this would be, you're looking at the Carolina Hurricanes, obviously, two wins away from getting to the Stanley Cup Finals. But really, I'm looking at, say, the Carolina Panthers, okay? Not necessarily East Carolina University. Let's hope the Pirates have a nice year, but they're going to do well. We know we've got a ticket on them in the College World Series. So we'll be rooting for those Pirates there. But the Panthers won the division last year. People seemingly have already forgotten about that. And really, Jensen, the focus here for me is on North Carolina football this year. Because, do you hear that? Silence. That's exactly what Bill Belichick wants this year in the offseason. That's what Michael Lombardi wants in the offseason. I said right here in this program, when everybody was running to take shots at Belichick and Lombardi, and people were making some outlandish statements, those guys are going to get run out of town. And I went right to the source and asked specifically, hey, you guys looking to get out? And Michael told me, Dave, you know better. You know what these people are saying is not true. And so I came on here and said that. And look, it's been a very quiet offseason for North Carolina football. And that's exactly the way those guys wanted. I'm expecting much bigger things for North Carolina football, like we're getting out of East Carolina baseball, like we're getting out of Carolina and the Panthers in the NFL, and certainly the Hurricanes in the Stanley Cup. Sports, all-time high right now in the state of North Carolina.
Dave, Yellowstone is a TV series that transcended time, brought generations together, and still might be one of the greatest, highlighting what has been an amazing part of life and a part of our great country. Well, Taylor Sheridan has followed it up with another gem, and Dutton Ranch, debuting here just a handful of weeks ago, chronicling as a spinoff of both Rip Wheeler and Beth Dutton, of course, played by Cole Hauser and Kelly Riley specifically. Taylor Sheridan does it again, man. Appointment viewing. It's available every Friday. And if you are all about the life and the lineage of how we do it in America in that part of the country, we go from Montana to Texas. And buddy, you are in store for yet another bingeable series. Appointment viewing. Dutton Ranch stock way up just a handful of episodes in.
I can't binge this one because I'm already caught up. It's such a great show. I'm right there with you. Anything Taylor Sheridan does right now, I'm already watching these. So yeah, we're in the great state of Texas now. Made that pilgrimage there. It's an amazing spinoff. And yes, you are right. He has done it again. What goes up must come down. And my first stock down, this is not going to be a surprise. You've been watching the show for the last couple of days. It's Kenny Atkinson. Kenny, I didn't think you'd be on my list here. And I don't think Cleveland thought you'd be on the list here. You can't come out and say, hey, you know, going into game four where your season's on the line, that analytically we're up 2-1. I mean, you're kind of saying some things that just didn't make a whole lot of sense. It's at least not what people want to hear. So you look at the numbers and the spreadsheets all you want. You got to go win the game. And when you get a double, when you get a 22-point lead less than 8 minutes ago in the game one, that's where you lost the series, Kenny. We talked about it the next day right here in the program. So there was no coming back from that. You're coming back next year. I wonder how long you'll have the job if you get off to a slow start next year. Forget about the spreadsheets. Forget about the analytics. Figure out how to win. And winning in the postseason is very different than the regular season. Great job in the regular season. You got to figure out a way to take the next step a la a Mike Brown, or else you won't be the coach in Cleveland that much longer.
Great minds think alike. This is where I was going. This is a layup for me for first stock down. And to be honest, there's now more pressure on him to acquit himself from this series. That's without a roster change, Dave. Imagine the pressure if they acquire Giannis Antetokounmpo, if LeBron James comes back as a mercenary because he can't win a title by himself. I think that's going to be the fascinating dynamic here of where we find this Cavalier team, and more important, the futures board. What's the price of this club? Let's say the Knicks go win the title. What does the East look like? The Celtics coming back. They know they've got to make adjustments. Joe Mazzulla gets the coach of the year, but was he really? Not really. When you look at where the rest of this Eastern Conference was, Philly upsets Boston. They had pieces and just kind of ran out of gas. Orlando was better. I think we're going to look and see what happens with the Atlanta Hawks and just the topography of the East in general. But you got to clean up your own backyard first. And the toughness factor, we're talking about, again, back-to-back off seasons. Kenny Atkinson stock down right now. All the chance in the world to be able to try and find your way back to the promised land. But you got some things to clean up for sure.
Again, we do not confer as to what our choices are going to be. I'm always surprised. I'm sure Joe Frieza, our esteemed producer, must go, oh, the guys are thinking along the same wavelength again with Kenny Atkinson as our first stock down. My other one's going to be Toronto sports a little bit. You're watching Montreal do what they're doing here in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and the Blue Jays way down. And obviously they've had some injuries, but cry me a river. You know, the Maple Leafs, this has got to sting the nostrils. See Mitch Marner right now, the favorite to win the Conn Smythe. The Raptors, just kind of a day. You had a shot there in game 7 against Cleveland. You can't get that done. Just, I'm just looking at it totality to our neighbors to the north there in Toronto. And while everything is looking really good right down there in the Carolinas, not looking so good north of the border in the entirety that is Toronto sports.
Dave, you know I have had trials and tribulations in my travels over these last couple of years. Another incident happening. And listen, I'm not bougie. I got an opportunity to upgrade for a few extra dollars to sit in first class this past road trip. And so I took advantage of it. What I was not anticipating were some parents that had very young, loud, obnoxious kids. Now, Dave, I don't know if it's a first day executive order in a Lewis Ross administration, but I'm borderline willing to go to Congress and testify that the well-being of adults, when you pay good money to be in those seats, I think you deserve some calm, some circumstance, some ability to enjoy what should be a first-class experience. Dealing with screaming kids, and more importantly, and I haven't been a parent, but if you don't give me the at least a proverbial shh to your kids, I have another problem with you. Young kids in first class, the hell are we doing? Okay, get back into coach, take care of them there. There's a reason why we've got people that pay the money to be where they are. Or at the very least, try and get your kids to behave, because there's no first class experience when you have got kids that scream louder than my noise canceling headphones can cancel out the noise. Stock down on very young, loud kids in first class.
If you're watching on YouTube TV or FanDuel Sports Network, I don't know if that's AI generated here for the kids being strapped in first class. Because, Jensen, I think part of the problem that you might have is that the kids are running wild, do whatever they want to do. They yell at the top of their lungs. Like, you're right, though. Just a simple shh. And you and I are not parents. So we're not telling anybody how to parent out there. But, Jensen, right? Common courtesy here for the other people in first class. Just a little shh goes a long way. That's all we're asking for, people. We're not asking for a whole lot. So, again, if you're flying with Jensen first class and you have kids, shh, just give them a little hush. That's all it takes. We're back. So much more to get to. It is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
The clock is ticking on one of the best VSiN Pro offers of the entire year. This is your final week, people, to get a full year of VSiN Pro, which is normally $240 for just $199. So when you sign up today, we're going to get you an extra 2 months for free. So that's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day with the promo code PRO, P-R-O. You're going to get daily best bets from all of our hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools and matchup analysis, 24/7 live video, plus full show replays on the VSiN Watch app so you can watch on your time, and all of our betting guides, and that is multiple. We're talking college football, NFL, Major League Baseball for the next 14 months for every major sport throughout the entire year. This offer will expire May 31st. Do not wait. All you got to do is go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use that promo code PRO, P-R-O, at VSIN.com/subscribe. We're going to have Adam Burke join the program here in the very next segment. Get his thoughts on Major League Baseball and Cleveland sports and beyond. Then our Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds. We'll join the program to talk a little bit about the Charles Schwab Challenge, which we are going to talk about right now. And Jensen, again, something we detailed earlier in the program. Again, please like, subscribe to the VSiN by the Books podcast. You can catch up on your time for your Bet the Builds that you had out there. And I didn't want to spoil the segment, but I did like somebody you had on there, and that is Sudarshan Yellamaraju. Now, you can find Sudarshan out there, very talented lefty Canadian golfer, at about 90-1 that I found yesterday in some markets. And I am going to sprinkle some in the outright market here on Sudarshan. Now, his form has not been the best coming into the Charles Schwab. And again, he has not qualified for a lot of the elevated events. So you haven't seen him as much here as of late. And that's why I think he's really going to thrive this week. This is not a ballpark that is too big for a guy like Yellamaraju. And when I watch him play, Jensen, as I've noted through the last couple months, there's not a lot of weaknesses to his game. So there's not like a golf course that you would say this is going to be his kryptonite on a track like this. Maybe length is something that I would worry about a little bit And that will not be the issue this week here at the Charles Schwab. So for a guy that's very accurate, certainly off the tee, very accurate with his approach play, and when he gets that putter rolling, you can say that about a lot of golfers out there, that can really be the X factor for a guy like Sudarshan Yelamaraju. But I think he'll be around for the weekend and certainly deep into placement markets, if not an outright at 90-1. JJ Spahn has been, it's been a perplexing year for JJ, because if you remember at the beginning of the year, I was cashing a lot of tickets fading JJ Spahn. And it was somebody that, again, just kind of getting in the weeds a little bit and getting kind of nerding out on some of these golfers. He was not very confident coming into the year. And I think he was having almost FOMO of like, am I not backing up winning the United States Open a year ago, which, by the way, will be in 2 weeks up there at Shinnecock. And I expect him to play well up there at Shinnecock in a couple weeks at the U.S. Open, a tough golf course. This you would think would be the perfect prep for something like that. Again, where it's not so much about length, it's more about accuracy. And when you win the U.S. Open the way JJ Spahn did on a really tough golf course like he did, and to be able to be accurate off the tee and then make some putts. And again, that's where JJ has really gone south for him this year. I think the ball striking should be fine this week. If you can find him at 35-1, Jensen, I certainly think that's a playable number on the outright market. This is a weak field in comparisons to the ones we see week in, week out on the PGA Tour. So without a lot of the big guns in there, I feel like he feels like he's got a real shot to not just have a good top 20, top 10, but potentially get an outright this week as well. So those are the two guys a little bit down the board. Of course, I love the big suite at 10-1 here. If you can still find double digits on Ludvig Åberg, and he is the betting favorite, and I agree with that in the marketplace, but down the board, longer shots, 35-1, 90-1, I'm looking at JJ Spahn and Sudarshan Yelamaraju.
All right, very good. I have five top tens and five outrights that I have played this week. I did go with you on Ludvig at 10-1, also a top 10 finish, including ties at plus $1.15. Again, the elite ball striking, perfect course fit. You feel like this is that tournament that he can finally take the next step. Russell Henley, we mentioned it in not only our Bet the Builds, but wanted to get a piece of him in the top 10 market, plus $1.80, as well as the outright, just a little bit south of 20-1. He leads the PGA in driving accuracy. What do we need here at Hogan's Alley? Precision and precision. So that will be huge with the tight fairways. He's an excellent scrambler. So I love Russell Henley at both the top 10 and the outright. Went with Justin Thomas, again, strong ball striker, elite wedges around the greens. He's got some good history here. And quite frankly, the momentum is on his side too. So I went with a top 10 finish at plus 235, found him just south of 24-1 in the outright market. Right back to Ricky Fowler, who I know was on my card the last week or so. He's got not only the momentum, but I think the putter is finally there for him on a consistent basis. Experienced guy. It's a little bit of a longer plus 215 for a top 10. And I got him also a little bit south of 28-1. How about Alex Smalley? This might be one of my favorite value plays. Six consecutive top 25s, I believe. He is just on a heater right now. He's making the cut. He's great in gaining strokes. And his shots gained period in tee to green and the putting, I think all presents for a guy at 34-1 to win it outright. Not a bad idea. And I took some at 3-1 for a top 10 finish. So we'll cap it there. But again, a lot of guys towards the top of the leaderboard as far as the odds go. Not a shock there. But the value on Fowler and Smalley, I really liked here this week.
I like the Smalley play a little bit more than I would the Fowler play this week. And I do really like what he did at the PGA Championship 2 weeks ago. I mean, Alex Smalley did not shy away from the moment. I know he had a rough front nine, but remember the way he finished? We talked about the million-dollar putt he made on the 18th hole. I really do like where your head's at there with the Smalley play. Henley at 20-1. And again, I love Ludvig again this week, people. But I like the value of Russell at 20-1 actually more than I like the value of Ludvig at 10-1. Not necessarily just because it's double the price, but it's because, again, it's a ball striker. So you got to be in the fairway. Ludvig should be as well. But you mentioned that scrambling around the green, that's not necessarily where Ludvig has been having his strongest marks. His putter can be a little bit awry. And when Russell, as you mentioned, the scrambling that he normally shows up at golf courses like this, I think that's actually a better ticket to have at that price point at 20-1 versus Ludvig at 10-1. But I expect both of those guys to be there at the end of the day here at top 10 finishes. I really do like both of those price points. But again, a little bit down the board here, and I can't wait to see if Wes Reynolds concurs with us when we look at a guy like Shadar Jeanyela Miraju at 90-1 and or J.J. Spawn at 35-1. Jensen, when you see this before the Memorial next week, right there at Jack's Place, and then we get to the U.S. Open. And again, questions I love to ask Wes about all the time, too. I just wonder how much of these guys, say like an Oberg, yes, you'd love to win, but really it's about that rounding into form for some of these guys, whereas other guys I think look at a tournament like this and say, boy, this is a chance to break through without the Scotties and the Rorys in the field.
No doubt. And hey, nothing like raising your confidence to a top 10 or to the winner's circle ahead of our third major of the year. One question I had for you, because for people that don't realize it with Hogan's Alley and how tight, I'm not sure people realize you've never watched a Charles Schwab, how tight these fairways are. You always do a great job and interested after we get through the first round tomorrow. Your specific things you look for on this particular course when you're looking to do the live ads, is it more so the guys that are not the bombers and whoever that first day looks like they're in control of the iron play off the tee, you know, getting into fairways? What's your biggest handicap for what you're looking for after round one tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm looking right now in round one, and we'll see if that changes the way the golf course plays. To your point here, Jensen, I'm fading the big bombers. Now, Ludvig is a bomber, but he's accurate off the tee. That's not where I worry about the big Swede, and that's why, again, I don't mind if you have those outright tickets on him, top 10s, top 20s. Again, I think he'll be right there in position to win. The guys that I'm looking to fade early on are the guys that maybe aren't the most accurate, even though they have massive length. And that's a guy that we got to the winner's circle with a week ago in Pearson Cootie. So I'm going to be looking to fade a guy like Pearson Cootie, possibly in a first-round matchup, and or once the golf props are out there at the books for maybe overplays. You have to look at it in reverse. Overplays for a round score here if they're not accurate, because that's where you're going to get dinged even if you're a long hitter, like a Gary Woodland, a Pearson Cootie. So, Jensen, those are the type of guys in matchups, which I've had a lot of success on this year, much more than outrights, by the way. Those are the type of guys I'm going to look and see. Let's say they get matched up with and you have to shop around for the matchups that you're really hunting down people, a guy like Harry Hall, who I know you like to bet a lot. Harry's very accurate off the tee. So if I can get a guy like that, that might not be the longest guy, but very accurate, I'll be looking where maybe a little bit off the beaten path. People are not necessarily looking at players like that. That's what I'm going to be looking at in the first round and then adjust into that second round. Obviously, you got to check the weather. If you're looking for first round leader plays here, people, certainly I normally like to traditionally look for players that are going off earlier, where traditionally the conditions are better. If there's wind, it normally comes up later on. In the afternoon, certainly where you're playing the Charles Schwab, that's traditionally what happens. So look to those angles here early on in the day. Normally it's going to be better scoring. It might get a little bit rougher as the day goes on. We'll talk to Wes and see if he concurs with that sentiment coming up here in just a little bit. But you mentioned that we're going to have Adam Burke during the program next. And Berkey, beware. You know I'm going to ask you about the Cavaliers and about the Guardians. I know it's been a rough week here to start off in Cleveland sports, but we'll discuss it next right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
Gonna have our Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds conversation coming up next, talking all things Charles Schwab Challenge and beyond. But we always look forward to our conversations with our managing editor right here at the network. He is Adam Burke. Give him a follow on X at Skating Tripods. Joins us now here on the Progressive Guest Line. And Adam, I hate to do it to you, but you know, Jensen and I have been talking about it a lot this morning. Big news out of Cleveland after being swept away. And we're going to run it back here with Kenny Atkinson and James Harden. And look, I haven't seen numbers yet posted for next year. How do you feel about that as a Clevelander, that we're bringing Kenny back? And analytically, this series is tied up at 2, by the way.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to game 5, whenever that's going to be played. You know what? Look, I'm okay with it, honestly. I mean, you know, they brought in Kenny Atkinson because he was different from JB Bickerstaff. Bickerstaff is a guy who's very hardline on the defensive end, not a lot of creativity on the offensive side of things. So they go in a different direction with Atkinson, who runs a very modernized style of offense. But the team kind of fell off a little bit defensively. I think it was kind of tricky on the fly to assimilate James Harden into this team. And then you have Harden and Mitchell next to each other, who are two very high usage players. Harden just looked old in the playoffs, and I don't know if that's something you can fix, you know, going into next season. But I didn't want them to tear it all down from a coaching standpoint and start over again when the problems are with this roster, right? Like, Evan Mobley is just not tough enough on the inside. We'll see if they decide to move on from him. I think that's probably, you know, what the big splash will be here this offseason for this team. I just think that they have to really fix some things with the lineup and maybe tailor it more to what Atkinson wants to do, what Atkinson does really, really well, and then go from there. And if it doesn't work next season, you can reevaluate, certainly. But, you know, I think there's a reason why you went out there and hired Atkinson. And there's a reason why, you know, a lot of people kind of thought pretty highly of him coming into this season, particularly, like I said, with that modernized style of offense. So I'm fine with it. I think it's the personnel and the fact that, you know, a lot of guys just didn't really play all that well in the postseason. Not to mention they went seven games with both the Raptors and the Pistons, and they were just gassed by that point because these guys in the NBA aren't used to playing every night.
Yep, that's true. Playing every night, though, we are used to as baseball players. And not to add salt to the wound here, but last couple of nights at Progressive Field, the number one scoring offense in Major League Baseball, the Washington Nationals, have flexed their muscles against both Tanner Bibee and Joey Cantillo. Do we get some resistance here with Gavin Williams coming off arguably his best start of the season? What a gem that was against Christopher Sanchez in the City of Brotherly Love. Any handicap for you on this one today between the Nats and the Guards?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really important game for Cleveland, right? I mean, they get an off day tomorrow. I know a lot's been made of how few off days they've had, you know, during this recent stretch. And this is still a fairly young ball club, fairly young starting rotation. Chase DeLauder's playing every day, and he really shouldn't be, given his health history. But that's the situation that they're in from a lineup standpoint. I think it's a really big game for Cleveland today. Big favorite. Your ace is on the mound. This is an important one for them. But Gavin Williams is a 15% home run to fly ball percentage this season. And while he's done a good job of getting strikeouts and, you know, chases outside the zone and stuff like that, when he does come into the zone, he can give up some long balls. And I mean, what a ridiculous display of power from this Nationals lineup here in the first two games. Very, very impressive what they've done all season long, but also the pitching staff isn't very good. And while Cleveland hasn't taken advantage the last couple of nights, I think they could today against Miles Michaelis because pretty much everybody hits that guy. So I like the over 7.5 in this one today. Matinee day game, temps in the 80s. Jensen, you know this better than anybody. That stadium plays a lot different once it warms up than it does, you know, when you got that cool lake breeze and all of that. So I think we could see a bit of a launching pad out to right field here today. I think both teams have the chance to take advantage. It's like over 7.5 in this one.
Adam, I want to drill down a little bit on that because I brought this up with Jensen earlier in the program. I was doing some digging on some futures numbers here, and the Nationals are an intriguing team at this juncture. They're a couple games over 500. They're only a game and a half out of a wild card spot, and yet in the marketplace, they're 13-1 to make the postseason. And like what comparative shopping, right? The Mets, who are a disaster, 11 games under, they're 6-1. Like, have people just slept on this Nats team? Because the power, I know you and Jensen have notified people about that if they're not paying attention. I don't know if they can hit their way to a wild card, but does that price point at 13-1 intrigue you at all?
Where does the pitching help come from, right? I think that's the biggest question here. You know, I mean, they don't really have high upside arms that are ready to go in the minor leagues, and the higher upside arms that they do have are guys who are hurt, like a Travis Sikora, like a Harlan Susana. So those guys are probably not going to be options. The bullpen is just kind of a patchwork group of randoms. And I mean, Mitchell Parker's thrived in a relief role, but other than that, you know, it's very hard to trust any of those guys out there. And from a starting staff standpoint, Cade Cavalli is solid. Foster Griffin's had his moments, but despite what Zach Littell did to Cleveland the other day, he is not a major league caliber pitcher this season. And neither is Michaelis. So, I mean, look, if they're going to kind of pull a 90s Indians and just kind of outslug everybody, good for them. I don't know if that's going to be sustainable, though, but I've been very, very impressed, obviously, with a lot of what we've seen. They're a young ball club, young manager is, what, 32 years old. There's a level of belief here with this team that is pretty impressive. I just think that when you look around, it's going to be hard to hold off teams like the Diamondbacks, who are playing really, really well. The Phillies have been charging. The Cubs are going to get this thing figured out. I don't know if it'll be too little, too late, but they're going to get this thing figured out. I just think there's too many teams that are less flawed than the Nationals that are going to be in that wild card mix.
Yeah, I'm wondering too if they do kind of run out of gas pitching wise, because you and I both know the marathon of the season will expose that pitching depth. If CJ Abrams becomes a trade chip at the deadline, and boy, that'd be a massive one for sure. Hey, speaking of the Diamondbacks, one of the great stories, at least out of the World Baseball Classic, was Michael Soroka from Team Canada. He gets the ball in the afternoon affair here against the Giants. Trevor McDonald on the other side. Listen, if the Diamondbacks can get it right pitching wise, they've got plenty of offense, and that they have still yet to find their footing of what they had last year as one of the top offensive clubs in the National League. As it pertains to today, mention how ballparks play different. No marine layer there in the afternoon by the bay at Oracle Park. Do we get a little more offense here, or do you like a particular side in this matchup?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think Arizona's favored by a little bit too much today. I kind of like the Giants at this price point. Trevor McDonald's a guy, gave up 7 runs in his last start, but he only gave up 3 hits. Kind of made his own problems. He hit a couple of guys with pitches, walked a run in with the bases loaded. And then, you know, the bullpen kind of added some fuel to that fire and made his stat line look a lot worse than it actually was. But 12% swinging strike rate so far in his 4 starts, 62.5% ground ball rate. I think he's a tough guy to score off of. You know, as long as he's not creating his own issues like he did in that last start. Guys, it's hard in today's game to string a lot of hits together. You know, we see a lot of runs scored off of the home run, off of doubles, you know, high slugging percentages, stuff like that. When you're a ground ball guy, over 60%. I mean, that's an elite level, you know, of ground balls, an elite ground ball rate for McDonald's. So I think it's kind of tricky. You know, I mean, the infield defense for the Giants is not overly great, but still, you know, I mean, those guys are going to have blowups where the ball doesn't get hit at people, balls find holes, things of that sort. Maybe that's just kind of what happened, you know, with McDonald last time out. Soroka's off to a great start. Diamondbacks are playing really well. I think they won, what, 9 out of 10 here. But I just think this line is a little bit too high. Yeah, no marine layer today, but still, it'll probably be a low-scoring game there at Oracle Park. You know, a hit here or there with men in scoring position, got to change the complexion of this one. I think this is closer to a toss-up than the line implies. So I do think there's a little bit of line equity on the Giants here in this one today.
Adam, I think the Yankees just scored again against Bailey Foster and the Royals yesterday. They're $1.57 betting favorite today. Not Bailey Falter this day. It's going to be Noah Cameron on the bump here. Plus $1.30 is a comeback here. I'm looking at Gerrit Cole making his second start. He looked pretty good in 6 innings of work in his first start of the year. Do you stay away from guys this early in the season for them until you really get a read on if Gerrit Cole is back to being Gerrit Cole?
I mean, the cop-out answer, right, is it's on a case-by-case basis. But, I mean, with a guy like Gerrit Cole, he knows his body. He knows his stuff. Yeah, he's not entirely sharp at this point in time, but this Royals team is one of the biggest disappointments in baseball to me this season. You know, I know that they've had pitching injuries specifically, with Cole Reagans, but offensively, I mean, I expected a lot more out of this team. I expected a lot more slugging. I expected a lot more left-handed power. We just haven't seen it out of this group, and it's been really disappointing, you know, to kind of see here, especially because I did pick up a future on them to win the Central Division when Tarek Skubal went out, and you know the Guardians have gotten hot and the Royals have gone in the opposite direction, and that bet kind of looks dead in the water right now. The other thing about this game is, you know, Noah Cameron, while he's kind of a crafty left-hander, there's not a lot of margin for error when you can't overpower a team like the Yankees. You've got to generate swing and miss to shut down this Yankees lineup. I don't think that Cameron can do that. This is one play I'm kind of looking at, trying to decide how, if and how, really, I want to play it. If I want to lay the big number, if I want to play the run line, because it is a road team that I know is going to hit 9 times. I think Cole should be fine and just get stronger as he keeps going. And for Cameron, like I said, the margin for error is really thin against this kind of lineup. And that definitely concerns me here at Kauffman Stadium tonight.
Guilty as charged as well. It's one of the biggest swing and misses for me this year as the Royals. I just cannot figure out why this team cannot hit, but they are not. Adam, you are spot on there. Everybody give him a follow on X at Skating Tripods. And again, check him out at beeson.com daily here as our managing editor. Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds. He's up next.
And by the books right here on VSiN.
We We continue VSiN by the books on this Wednesday morning. We always look forward to our Wednesdays with Wes. The great Wes Reynolds joins the program now. Give him a follow on X at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Joins us here in the Progressive Guest Line. And Wes, this is kind of that I guess it could be a sweet spot here for Ludwig Åberg this week as the favorite at the Charles Schwab, because we get Jack's Place next week, the U.S. Open in 2 weeks. Is this a softer spot here on the PGA Tour schedule that maybe you can identify some deeper guys down the board, or will it still be a guy like Ludwig to break through for the first time this year at least?
Yeah, it could be both, Dave. I would lean more toward the former than the latter. But Ludwig's the justifiable favorite. Obviously, the form, if you look at the finishes, have been great. And it's like, wow, well, you know, he's close. But at single digits, at below 10 to 1, as much as I have faith in his talent, in the final round, he hasn't gotten it done. And man, we've seen that already a couple times this year. He was even right there in the mix in the PGA a couple weeks ago, makes a mistake, and all of a sudden, you know, goes sideways and goes the wrong way quickly. So it's not the talent that I think is questioned. I think it's the course management. And Colonial is kind of a course management course because it is a ball striking type of course. It's not going to play certainly as easy as we saw TPC Craig Ranch play last week. So you're not going to see 30 under par, even though I think you're going to see lower scoring just simply because the wind is not going to blow. So you're probably getting, you know, maybe mid to high teens as low as that, but he could win here, but I win other ways this week.
And to kind of segue off that, because this is for people that don't know the course, little Hogan's Alley, you better be accurate off the tee. If you get out of the fairway, which is extremely strict as far as the margins there, did that help filter you specifically, Wes, at the top of your card and also in the outright market as well?
Yeah, a little bit, Jensen, because like you mentioned, Hogan's Alley, in honor of Ben Hogan, who won here five times, and his legacy is widely celebrated here. So what does it tell you if you know anything about Ben Hogan? Ball striker, one of the greatest of all time, right. Maybe the greatest of all time. So that's what I think that you really have to look at this week. And some comparable courses, or maybe some of those shorter type ball striking approach courses like Harbortown, Sedgefield, Innisbrook, where they play the Valspar. Those are certainly ones I think you want to look at that have some correlated success to what you see here.
Yeah, that's exactly what you think of when you think of Ben Hogan, maybe the greatest golf swing, and accuracy is exactly what he was known for. I was a little disappointed, and I played JJ Spawn a couple weeks ago at the PGA Championship, and he didn't make the cut there. I want to go back to him this week, Wes. Where are we at a guy like that? We're normally a tougher, at least, than from a birdie fest a week ago. You would think that could be the right designs for a guy like that with the U.S. Open on the horizon here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think Spawn is a good selection here. He didn't make the final card for me. I'll probably play him in some sort of placement market, like a top 20 or a top 30. But two of his three career PGA Tour wins are in Texas, so he's always kind of played fairly solidly in those events. But a couple guys I went to at around the same price, you know, in that high 20s to low 30s range. I did go with Justin Thomas. I'm thinking that, you know, he's finally, I think, coming around a little bit. Remember, he didn't get started until March because he had those right. hip and back surgeries in the offseason. Missed the cut at the Arnold Palmer, then went eighth at the Players, and then went fourth 2 weeks ago at the PGA. His best finish in a major since winning that PGA in 2022 at Southern Hills, by the way, which is also an original design by the designers that designed Colonial, was also redesigned and renovated by Gil Hans, who is doing like all the major championship courses. So there is that correlation there. And JT, his last four victories have been at TPC Southwind, TPC Sawgrass, Harbortown, and then you include that PGA at Southern Hills, all courses with similar profiles to Colonial. So he made the card. Same price. I don't love the price, but love the form. Ricky Fowler, 25-1. Prior to that finish at the PGA, which isn't going to look impressive, I think he was like 60th, but he was red figures after three rounds, and he shot that 75 on Sunday. He had three top 10 finishes before that PGA 2 weeks ago, so I think that was just maybe a blip on the radar. Top 20 in putting, top 20 in strokes gained total, six here back in 2023. I think Ricky Fowler is going to continue his good play. And now the pressure, by the way, off making the U.S. Open is certainly off of him because he qualified and got in that top 60 in the world golf rankings.
Absolutely love it. I did jump in on a top 10 there with JT, and I will follow you as well, Wes, in the outright to see if he can get back in the winner's circle. When I read your breakdown of Sung J.M., I'd kind of do a double take. Three top 15 finishes at Colonial in his last five appearances, yet he's 50-1. That feels insane to have that kind of value for a quote-unquote longer shot for a guy who's had exceptional course history the last half decade.
Yeah, Jensen, I think maybe that price is a little high because he has played a lot of golf. And Sung J.M., he got started late, by the way, too. He had that wrist surgery, and he didn't actually start until the Arnold Palmer back in March. But Sung J.M., like, plays every week. I think this is his eighth straight week playing. But we've seen him win on the PGA Tour, you know, playing, like, 15 straight weeks. Did that a few years ago. Ninth last week, by the way, at the CJ Cup at Byron Nelson, which you don't want to take too much into because that played so easy, but it's still a good finish. And he was seventh in putting, ninth in scrambling. Has always been, I think, very solid here. And he's kind of getting back into form a little bit. I think, you know, he plays a lot because he likes to knock the rust off. And he's not a guy, he's kind of like an old school Vijay Singh in the fact that he doesn't take a lot of weeks off. So you see him play in some of like the down events too, not just necessarily like the signature events or the big time tournaments. So Sung J, I thought absolutely made a lot of sense. I'm willing to buy in. Same with Ryo Hisatsune at 45-1, who was T19 at the Nelson last week. Fourth in accuracy, 10th tee to green, 10th in ball striking. He's actually made 14 straight cuts since he missed the season opener, at the Sony out in Hawaii. So I thought those two made a lot of sense this week.
One of your longer shots out there, and then shout out to your Long Shots crew with Wes and Matt Brown and Kelly Bidwin weekly here. Great podcast you got to listen to in the network. You mentioned guys that like to play all the time. The Vijay Singh comparison is a perfect one. I look at Michael Kim the same way, right? That guy last year, it just seemed like he played every event that he could possibly play. Do you like his form coming in here at almost 100-1 this week?
I do, Dave. Six here, by the way, a couple of years ago and 16th last year. So he's played pretty solid here. He's a guy that has been playing exclusively in signature events pretty much in the lead up since that runner up at the Valero Texas Open. So you look at the form line, right? And you look, okay, week to week, how did he do? You know, 44, 30, you know, 32nd or whatever, where it's like, okay, he's not really challenging, but this is a drop in class, even though you do have some very good players in this field. And this is not a signature event. So there are sometimes I like to go with those guys when they drop a little, when, you know, they don't have the top guys, the Scotties and the Rorys and the Xander Schauffele's right here. And this is a place where he can win, where he has historically put up some very good finishes here at Colonial. And we have seen in recent years, you've always seen class players win here, but we've seen Ben Griffin, Davis Riley, Emiliano Grillo, Jason Kokrak, Kevin Na, you know, guys kind of a little bit down the board, 50, 60, 70-ish to one. So this isn't a place where you really have to load up on the shorter price guys.
All right, last one from me, buddy. I know that you had your eyes on that Indianapolis 500. I don't know if the three of us would survive in the snake pit at our ages these days. It would be great scenery, to say the least. How about that finish? What, 23 thousandths of a second, closest in history? Incredible race. And again, Indianapolis putting on an entire show for the whole country to see.
Yeah, I was willing to lose my David Malukas ticket, Jensen, right there at the line. I was like, oh, man, he's got it now, because Rosenqvist was kind of on fumes with the fuel, longer tire stint. So it's like, okay. But credit to Felix Rosenqvist, you know, a very good guy in the series, went around, got him. Great crowd, by the way, there at Indianapolis, with, you know, the whole scene. And it's a bucket list. I would recommend anybody in the VSiN by the Books audience to go at least once. Just to see the pageantry, just to see, you know, the tribute to our fallen when Taps plays. If you're not getting a tear in your eye, then you're lying. And you know, just to see the command of the engines, you know, all the pageantry, the celebrities and the traditions. I think there's nothing like it. And I think that the Indianapolis 500 has endured for well over 100 years. It's going to be the 111th running next year. It was a fantastic race. It's one of the better ones you'll see, and clearly that close finish with Rosenquist and Malukas eclipsed that Marco Andretti Sam Hornish Jr. finish of 20 years ago. So I thought it was a great race. I'm glad they at least got it in, and the rain went away at least for a while.
I didn't know this, Wes, but very quickly, Jack Aru, we had him on the program last week. You get to choose your milk selection. What milk would you choose? Whole milk?
Little bit of Nesquik, man. I need some chocolate milk just to be different, man. I'm not going with that skim milk after that race.
Wes, you're the best. If you want more VEASAN, of course you do. And numbers games coming up next with Gil Alexander and Kelly Bidwin.